am alive and well, living in the land of dreams. I must be living under a lucky star, it seems. I got back down to basics, found a lot of joy in the simple things. Alive and well, and living in the land of dreams. After some of the things I've done, I'm surprised that I'm still living. I've spent my lifetime with a lot of taking and a little bit of giving. Somebody up there's looking out for me, no doubt. And he or she looked down on me and lifted me out. I am alive and well, and living in the land of dreams. I must be living under a lucky star, it seems. I got back down to basics, found a lot of joy in the simple thing. Just like everybody else. And every day I got the chance to get up and help myself. I don't need no TV preacher hollering at me, 'cause I have finally found the truth, and the truth made me free. I am alive
and well, and living in the land of dreams. I must be living under a lucky star, it seems.
I got back down to basics, found a lot of joy.
Many of you know that Larry Gatlin is a wonderfully gifted singer, songwriter, and stage personality. But when I interviewed him, I also found a very bright and very insightful person who is committed to helping people recover from alcoholism. Let's take a look at this interview.
I knew for years, I've known for the last 4 or 5 years before I finally did seek treatment, that I was either going to die or that something was going to have to happen to help me. And I kind of figured for the last 3 or 4 years of that it might be going to treatment and doing it over. I just was not ready to quit yet. And it finally reaches the point of diminishing return. If drugs and alcohol still worked for me, I would still be active in my addiction. They stopped working.
What did that mean?
It just no longer was any fun. The first time I ever powdered my nose with that, Peruvian marching powder,
What is that?
Cocaine hydrochloride. The first time I ever snorted cocaine, it was the most incredible feeling of my life that I'd ever had with my clothes on. It was fun. This is good stuff. And for the first couple, 3 years that I did it, it felt wonderful. It was great.
Did you drink to come down then?
I would do intelligent things like snort a gram of cocaine, take 2 Quaaludes, and then drink a bottle of tequila. You don't know which way you go. Whether you're going sideways or up and down or what. So it was a little bizarre.
Did you have blackouts?
Oh yeah. That was during the latter stages. I think I remember most of the stuff I did, unfortunately. That's kind of like the old boy said, I didn't know I was dancing. I thought I was dancing until somebody stepped on my fingers. That's kind of how I was,
Yeah. Did you bounce back and look great after a binge? Did that confuse your family?
Well, I didn't look that hot. I'll tell you. I look better now, thank God, than I did 10 years ago. The drinking and drugging and staying up late. Let's face it, like my brother said, that going to bed at 6:45 and getting up to 6:45 will kill a feller. You know what I'm saying? That's kind of the way it was with me. The Samsonite baggage under my eyes, the fact that I'd come home from Vegas and sleep for 4 days. Early in my life, when I was 25, you can bounce back okay from a drunk when you're 25. But as my addiction progressed toward the latter stages, I went on monumental binges. I'm talking about 6 days in Lake Tahoe that I ate one meal and did not sleep one minute and sang two shows every night. For 6 days, I lost 17 pounds. We're talking about power binging. I was the world's best. I've always, thought anything worth doing is worth doing to excess.
Did you see at all that it was interfering with your life?
Oh, you know that it is, but you just don't care.
How did you see it interfering with you, Vaughn?
Well, I couldn't sing like I used to. I wasn't writing the same kind of songs. It put the right side of my brain to sleep.
You were aware of it at the time that you...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was denying that I couldn't handle it. It's such a confusing... you're in such a maze. It's like you're trying to find your way out, and there is no way out as long as you're still using, or there wasn't for me. My singing was affected. My family life was affected. Like I say, I absolutely anesthetized the right side of my brain. The left side was okay. I could still, my motor functions were still all right. But the things, the emotions, the joy, the fear, the normal things that people have, the right side, the analog side of my brain did not work anymore. Therefore, the songs were very mechanical. My life was very mechanical. And it was worthless. It was a really horrible time.
What kind of lies did your disease make you start telling your wife? What'd you say?
You hear a good one?
Yeah.
Hello, honey. Hi, yeah, I'm not going to make it home. No. I know it's Thanksgiving. I know the folks are there. Yeah, Macy's Thanksgiving Parade is downtown in Manhattan, and I cannot get to the airport.
Oh.
Ain't that a beauty?
Oh, okay.
My wife, my kids, my mother and father were all there, and the fact is that I'd been loaded the night before and was still loaded, had the shakes so bad I couldn't hardly see. So I called. In fact, that is not true. I called my mother and told her to go across the street and tell my wife because the phone was busy, thank God, that one time I tried to call.
What were some other things that you did that made your wife back off and not confront you about your disease?
I told her that I had a back problem.
For what? Cocaine?
No, I told her I had a back problem and that if I acted a little squirrely sometimes, it was because I was taking pain pills. I had to have a pain pill for my back. That was one lie that I told. And I basically just told her to get out of my face. And that I had a lot of pressure. And damn it, I was going to handle this the best way I could and this and that. And she's an incredible human being. And she loved me and prayed for me through all of that, which was just, my insanity was unbelievable.
What was your bottom? How did you hit bottom? What was the thing that got you to say, oh my God, I can't take it anymore?
I was crawling around a floor in a hotel room with some really good friends of mine. I'd known them about 2 hours.
Why were you crawling around?
We were putting lint in a freebase pipe. We were picking lint out of the carpet on our hands and knees, hoping it was more to put in a pipe. And I happened to kind of crawl around toward the restroom. Literally crawling like we're having an adult yuppie Easter egg hunt. And I crawled around toward the bathroom and stood up and looked, and I just, who's this guy in the mirror? I do not know him. This is a real sick puppy.
What did he look like?
I looked horrible. I looked like a dead man. I weighed 150 pounds. I had not eaten in I don't know how long. I had not slept in how long. I'd been on a 3-day binge.
The cocaine stopped you from being able to eat?
Oh, yeah. You don't want to eat at all. I can't tell you how many times I've run into going to a restaurant and order food, and you see a buddy, and you go into the bathroom and says, hey, buddy, and you go in there and you go in there and do a couple of bumps of cocaine. You come back out, and there's a big meal. You say, boy, I'm just not hungry. I don't know, maybe.
Did you go through a period where you said, okay, I know I've got a problem. I give in. However, I can do it myself.
Yes, I did.
What was that like?
17 days. Boy, it was the most miserable 17 days of my life. I have a very dear friend. His name is Daryl Royal. If anybody's a football fan, well, Coach and Edith. He told me, he said, Larry Wayne, I love you, and you are a screwed up little cowboy. Let's fix it. I said, Daryl, I'm tough. I've got willpower. I've been a winner all my life. I can do it on my own. I ain't going to no goddamn joint with a bunch of alkies and druggies, a bunch of weirdos running around in white jackets and little doctors poking things in me. I ain't going. Denial. My disease was lying to me. He said, well, I don't think you can do it on your own. I think you need help, and I know a guy. I said, if I can't do it on my own, I'll come back and I'll go with you. He said, you got it.
What did you do in those 17 days?
I didn't use, probably drank, but I didn't use cocaine. That to me meant being straight if you didn't use any of the white powder. And I went to Fort Worth, and then my disease told me hey, you've been a good boy. Why don't you splurge? I went on a 5-day binge. So,
How long had you been off of cocaine before your disease said you've been a good boy? I mean, how long?
17 days.
Oh, I see.
That's it.
I said,
you've been good. Reward yourself. You've really been good. You've been strong. And that's when I went on a 5-day binge. And
what happened in that binge?
Oh, my God. That's when I crawled around the floor.
Oh.
And first of all, just was, you know, all I ever did was snort cocaine. I never shot it or injected it. I'd never freebase it. They didn't have crack. If they had crack, then I'd be dead. You'd be doing an interview with Casper the Ghost or somebody. It wouldn't be me.
Mm-hmm.
If they had crack, I'm a dead monkey.
How much money did you spend?
I left and went to Dallas with $3,000 for 4 days. I had $3,000 in my pocket. I wound up begging a cab driver, telling him who I was, begging him to take me to the airport free and giving me his address so I could pay him the money back. I got to the airport and I happened to run into a guy named Mike, who's, believe it or not, works in the bar at American Airlines at the Admiral's Club. He knew me. I'd been drunk in his place. He saw me walking in and knew I was in serious trouble, loaned me the money for the cab, called my mother and my wife and said he'll be there in a little while, you know, and kind of halfway got me straightened up because it was absolute insanity. I didn't know whether I was washing or hanging out, you know, I mean, it was horrible. So I got home. Ron Carpenter, my road manager, called me and said, Larry, let's have lunch. Ronnie's never used that tone with me in his life.
Mm.
You know, it was very business, very matter of fact, and I knew he was going to quit. I knew that he loved me too much to stay around and watch me die. And he was going to make one last attempt to say, hey, please get help. I hung up the phone. I called Daryl in Austin. I said, Coach, it's time to go do it. Let's get this over with. And it's the smartest decision I ever made. It saved my life. I went to the care unit. I stayed 28 days. I did, to the best of my ability, as God gave me the light, I did what they told me to do in those 28 days. I have done it for 732 days by the grace of God, today, a day at a time, and I'm having a ball.
What finally made your wife and kids calm down and start trusting your sobriety?
They went to a family program with me. They stayed 4 or 5 days in California.
Mm-hmm.
They started learning about me and about themselves and about our family as a unit. We talked very openly and very bluntly, face to face like this, with every member of our family, what I like about you and what I don't.
Describe a day in the life of Larry Gatlin then and a day in the life of Larry Gatlin now.
A day in the life of Larry Gatlin then was, oh my God, troubles. I mean, financial things of having to run the organization, you know, trying to make enough money, worrying with fans, people pulling at you all the time, wanting autographs, people wanting your time, people wanting to pitch you songs, you know, is this record going to be a hit? Is anybody going to come to this show? Am I going to sing good tonight? Am I going to be able to find any dope? Problems. I mean, you cannot believe. Just how are we going to pay for that? You know, why don't they leave me? Just incredible, incredible problems. What it is now, when I wake up in the morning, it's problems. It's the same damn problems. Are these records going to be worth it now? Is somebody going to bug me today? Are they going to leave me? My God, is anybody going to come to this concert? Is my throat going to be all right? I've been a little hoarse. The one problem I don't have today is looking for dope. And see, not looking for dope makes all that other okay, and I can handle that.
Mm-hmm.
Today I say, I thank you that forever will take care of itself. I'm not going to drink or drug today. And if I can do that, it doesn't matter what happens to me today at all.
Mm-hmm.
Any day that I live without drinking or drugging is a successful day to me.
There was a young man who had the best of everything. He was the firstborn of a wealthy man, but he was not satisfied with the best of everything. So he took his possessions in his hand. He traveled far and wide, and he tasted worldly pleasure, but deep inside he was lonely without measure. He wound up in a pig pen nearly dead. Then he raised his eyes toward heaven and he said, I will arise and go back to my father's house. I will beg him to forgive me for the fool I've been. I will arise and go back to my father's house.
I would gladly be a servant if you'll take me back again. I was a young man who had the best of everything. I was the firstborn of a hard-working man. But I was not satisfied with the best of everything. So I took my possessions in my hand. I traveled far and wide, and I tasted worldly pleasure. But deep inside, I was lonely without measure. I wound up in Las Vegas, nearly dead. Then I raised my eyes toward heaven and I said, I will arise and go back to my Father's house. I will beg Him to forgive the fallen through my bed. I will arise and go back to my Father's house. I would gladly be a servant if you take me back again. I said, Father, I'm so tired of being alone. So I did arise and go back to my Father's house. And then He wrapped His arms around me and said, Son, you're welcome home.